Hello, Bulldogs. Thank you for tuning in to Who's Behind the Bulldog, Arvada High School's community interview podcast series. I'm your host and one of the assistant principals at Arvada, Jeremy Jensen. Each week, I'll sit down with someone from our Arvada community, be it staff, students, families, or other community members, to hear their stories. We'll discuss their histories, successes, challenges, learnings, future hopes and dreams, and much more. I hope you find some connections in their stories and hopefully are inspired to take some time to get to know them a bit better as our school year progresses. We have an amazing community here at Arvada, and I hope we can continue to strengthen that despite the challenges that await us in these unknown times. This week's Who's Behind the Bulldog features social studies facilitator Nick Fleschinger. This year, Nick will be teaching economics and economic honors, as well as co-teaching American Studies with Stephen Mathis and Darcy Botham. Nick is a graduate from Arvada High School and discusses some of his experiences of what Arvada was like when he was in high school here and how it has changed over time. He also discusses a fantastic student-centered simulation project that he and Brandon Murray have developed as well, his thoughts on why it is important to encourage students to not have a deficit mindset, and much, much more. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. Nick, hello. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing the best that I can.
All right. Thank you. And thank you for having me here.
Well, thanks for being here. I look forward to picking your brain about lots of things, especially about Arvada. You know probably more about Arvada than most people around here, or maybe even anyone around here.
Well, yes, now. There's a few of those people that left. Steve Urban would have been another good one.
Yeah.
Because he graduated from here in 1972 or 73.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that in a little bit, but tell me first just about yourself and what brought you into education.
What brought me into education? I'm going to be one of those teachers that tells you that I thought I was going to be a teacher when I was little. For me, I remember fourth grade deciding I was going to be a teacher. And that's because I have a sister that's 2 years older than me, and I was teaching her how to find books in the library, helping her with their math and explaining it. And just once a teacher explained something, helping kids in class and explaining things, and they said, "You're pretty good at this." And I was like, "Oh, maybe I'll be a teacher." And then as I got older, I realized I came from a family of teachers, not like my parents and that, but other relatives were teachers, principals and that. And then I was like, "Oh, maybe it's in the family." So that's what got me in education, and I've stuck with it.
Awesome. What were all of the roles that your other family members had as teachers?
Like elementary teachers, most of them. I had a second cousin who was an elementary teacher, then an elementary school principal.
Mm-hmm. Why social studies specifically?
I liked history. Yeah. Like the idea of history and teaching people about history, like I view it as some of it's the good things we've done and the mistakes we've done. And let's see the mistakes and correct them so we don't have to live that saying, you always repeat history.
Absolutely. All right, well, so tell me about your journey to Arvada, because I know that you were a high school graduate from
yes.
Arvada, and I think your mom had a connection here as well.
Yes.
Right? So you've been here for a while.
Yes, I have. So I graduated from Arvada High School. My mom also graduated from Arvada High School. And I currently have a niece going through here, which would make it the third generation of my family going to Arvada. So how did I get to Arvada High School as a teacher? Is that what we're asking?
Sure, yeah.
It's one of those things, when I graduated from college, there wasn't many jobs available in Jeffco because they had a big hiring in the late 60s, early 70s. So I got done in the late 90s, and those people weren't quite ready to retire. So I first came back and started subbing here. And since I was a sub, and it's old teachers that you had not long ago, 5 years ago, well, they kept giving me as a sub. So I was like the building sub, doing all kinds of subjects. And I can tell you the first time I applied for a job here, I didn't get it. I blew the interview. Because I was sitting in a room with people that were either like my coach and teacher, people I'd been subbing with for 2 years, and I didn't do a good job of selling myself because, they know me. Why do I have to sell myself? So I got yelled at for not doing a good job at interviews. My first teaching job was at North Arvada Middle School. I taught there for 3 years till an opening came here, and I applied and I got the job. And it also helped that I had been coaching here for the 3 years since then, because I actually started coaching here in the 1998-99 season. So I've coached here longer than I've taught here.
Okay. I'm really curious to hear your perspective on how things have evolved and changed here over the time that you've been here, or what you know about it even before you were here.
Well, how's it changed? The enrollment's gone down a whole bunch since I've, go back when I was in high school, because it was only three grades and we probably had around 2,000 to 2,200 kids, because it was 10th, 11th, 12th. And then you got the ninth grade when I first started teaching here in 2003, 2004, we probably had around 1,800 to 1,900 kids. Mm-hmm. And part of that is, you've gotten Ralston Valleys added, which takes some kids away from us, and you've got a lot of more charter schools and that have opened up that take our kids. And some of it is our population around here has aged, and they haven't always been replaced with young families with kids in that.
Sure.
But you can see that starting to happen more and more. Mm-hmm. So eventually maybe our enrollment will go up, just natural cycles.
What was it like being a student here?
I enjoyed it. I had a great experience here. I had good teachers that, pushed me, got me to do better and expected more out of myself than I thought. And that led to kind of the reason I wanted to come back to Arvada, to give that experience back to kids, in my community. I thought this was a great school. Hopefully I could come here and be a teacher and give that great experience to kids too that I had, mm-hmm. and prepare them for their future, because I felt like I was well prepared for my future, especially, you go to college and you got people from all over sitting in the same class, and you start talking about your high school versus their high school, and you're doing the, what, you didn't learn that in high school? You're like, you did? Yeah, I did. A little pride that you learned some things.
That's cool. Kind of shifting the conversation to more recent times here, what are some of the things like recently here that you are particularly proud of in your classroom?
I think what I'm proud of is kind of more of the projects that we're doing. And they have to be right projects. And more of that, if you go the, what is it called now, the Buck Institute, what they think, that you have a final product when you do it, and it's not the trifold board, like I call it science fair stuff, where you Xerox something out of the, off the internet and slap it on there and explain it, but an actual product where you're producing something or you're trying to solve a problem, I think that's been good for kids.
You and Brandon worked on a project last year, like right kind of around the time the COVID hit, right?
Yes.
Mike and Meg, and I was going to pop in and see what was going on in there, but can you kind of tell the listeners a little bit about that project? Because it sounds to me like pretty, really interesting.
Right. So you can call it a project, but we like to say it's more of a problem based, because what we're doing is in world history, what we had kids do was basically develop their own civilization from scratch. So we dropped them off in an alternative planet that we call Earth 10 or something like that. They were transported there and they got to start their civilization from scratch. So they got to figure out, the first thing they figure out is where. So they get a map of the United States and they can pick wherever in the United States, and this is, they tell us, that's your location. And based off of that, they got to figure out how, produce fire, shelter, food, and just keep evolving from there. And they come to us with a plan of how to start fire, and they have to have it approved by us. We call it the director, the teachers, the director, the God, or the all-controlling one. And they have to go through the steps. And the thing is, with their plan, we don't approve it right away because it goes into their historian record. So you can call it their library. So if civilizations down the road stumble on this, they can look at it and you can actually take it and start fire. So your instructions have to be pretty explicit in order to do things like house and home, building your home, farming. They have to come up with all that, hunting. You have to invent your own tools.
So there's a lot of technical writing that you're embedding within here.
Yes, trying to. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I thought was real neat, because it was my first year really doing it. Now, I've heard about it because it was my first year teaching World, but I've heard about it and heard it from the kids' side. But to be the teacher, what I really liked was it took a while, but they were starting to figure out how to write out those instructions so that they could hand it to someone else and they can understand it. You know, like, because they were in groups. So if I was the group working on fire and I wrote this up, hand it to the people working on shelter, and could they take that and start a fire? And if they said no, what didn't work?
Sounds fun. Sounds like pretty high engagement.
It was. We were starting to get there.
Yeah.
But then we went to online. And we tried to continue it during online, but that was a giant struggle.
Yeah. What were any lessons learned from that online component of like what you might do differently as we approach our next round here coming up in the fall?
Well, we, Brandon and I, talked about it. The thing was to keep some of those elements of them creating Google chat rooms is what we did, because at that time that was the best that they knew as kids. Create those Google chat rooms, even if we're in person, so that they can still talk to each other when they're not in class. So to make it feel like this is an ongoing thing, it's not just in class, you can work on this at any time, mm-hmm. was one of the things we saw, because that was kids weren't always engaging during class time or when other people were on there. But to kind of build in that check it to see if somebody has a question throughout was a big one that we had. And it's being, because we did it at the end of the year, being more intentional during the year when we're setting it up to get those skills a little stronger when we get to that point of like working in groups, figuring things out in a group, working with partners, how to concentrate and figure out how to have better instructions when writing something up.
Those practice opportunities like are so important, because it's like kind of like the running a marathon, right? Like you got to train for it. You have right. to like practice. You can't just jump in and run 26 miles. You got to start at 2 miles and then jump up to 3 miles and four and so on and so forth. So
right. we thought we had done enough of that, but apparently, well, when you go online, apparently we didn't do quite as much. So we were talking of building more of those opportunities along.
Maybe kids will be ready now. Maybe they've had enough of like being at home and they're like, okay, I need something more structured.
Yes, they probably will be.
Hopefully. other ways that you engage students, like what are some of the other go-to strategies that you found over time as a teacher just really work for you to make sure that your students in your class like really connect with your material, or they're just engaged for the things that you do?
So the way I've set up economics, because that's the main course that I've taught here, economics, how I've set it up is, and I know there's the where I do the notes, go over it, you know, the sage on the stage kind of thing. But then I usually like to, after notes, do activities where I always say we're putting economics into practice. So it's an activity where they can kind of go hands-on, see it working. It seems to get them engaged, because then you got the notes, you got the activity, and then you can put them both together. Seems to
make the connections right there.
Make connections, yeah.
Explicitly.
Get them more engaged. And the other way they get engaged too is usually I have some kind of economics and incentive for you participating. Mm-hmm. And I used to use candy, but we can't use candy anymore. So I've worked on like a get out of homework free assignment, which seems to motivate them very much to be part of participating.
Earning that sort of privilege.
Right. So it goes back to economics, right? Incentive, people to respond to incentives in predictable ways. If I give you the right incentive, you're going to do pretty much what I've asked you.
Talk to me about equity. What does equity look like for you as an educator and in your classroom?
For me, equity means equal access, because I kind of look at it from the economic perspective, where if you ask any economist where they say equity, it means everybody has access, opportunity to it. So I view it as everybody has equal access, opportunity to it, and it doesn't matter who you are. So for me, the best way to me to put it simply is I think everybody can succeed. I don't care where you came from. I don't care your background. Those are reasons, not excuses, for being successful.
So maintaining the same, like a high bar for everyone.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's like a really the largest component of it, right? Is to like make sure that like we don't lower the bar for any of our students.
Right.
Any thoughts on supporting those kids that may have bigger struggles to be able to like overcome barriers that others might not?
So what I've done and started doing in the past is giving them their vocab sheet beforehand, before we even start, like all the new economic terms. I give it to them, and as I go through notes and that, and they read stuff and they fill out the definitions, and they can use it on the test. I don't care who you are, you all get that same sheet. If you use it, you use it. If you don't, you don't. But you all had that same equal opportunity to have that sheet to use.
What are you excited about for this upcoming year?
Making it through it, being able to survive the year is what I'm really most excited about, especially since we're doing this with this interview with only a few days till we actually start going. But the other part is, I'm kind of, because I should be teaching mainly juniors and seniors, I'm kind of excited to see where they come back at. And I understand that we're going to have to deal with some re-engaging them back into school, as in the building and learning and that. And I feel once we get in person, the first couple days are going to not be academic. They're not going to be that. They're going to be kids that we know who just want to talk to us because they haven't seen us. They haven't heard our voice. They haven't heard our jokes. They haven't seen our smile or our sarcastic comments. They're going to want those because they've missed them. So I'm excited to see how they've adjusted or how they've dealt with it. See their resiliency.
Yeah, 100%. Kind of experiencing that with teachers. I seeing all the staff members come back and making those connections right now has been probably my biggest highlight over the past couple weeks. As people started to like trickle in and having these opportunities to meet and talk with them, like I'm doing with you right now, has been really, really good. And I'm looking forward to like seeing those kids and making those connections because I know that everybody's like really missing and craving them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's the people that you know should be there. And especially for the kids, you know, you have a couple more years. I should still see that teacher, be around them. And they're looking to get back to that.
It's going to be a different year this year. What's something that you kind of just want to focus on and grow on?
So, what I've thought about over the summer, and this all comes from my son, who's going to be a fourth grader, dealing with him in the spring, trying to play teacher to him and that. And just, he kept going to like a negative mindset very quickly and very often. And I was wondering, why do kids do that nowadays? Because I felt like when I grew up, I had more of a positive outlook on things. I didn't always go negative right away. So, a rough idea is I want to call it Mental Mondays, but that's just what I'm thinking. And work on that idea of staying out of a negative mindset, because once you're in that negative mindset, it's so hard to switch to a positive. Try to teach them that idea of go more positive than negative with your mindset. And if you have more of a positive mindset, you're going to be more successful in life than negative. And to use what we use around here, go away from that deficit thinking. Stop being deficit thinking that I can't do this, I can't. Let's view it as a challenge. Okay, so I can't do this. What can I do? And how am I going to get to where I need to go based on what I can do? So that's something I want to kind of focus on this year. Because I also listened to my son and that and thought, well, I've complained about this for a few years, and what have I done as a teacher to help these kids? Other than say, you need to change your mindset. Well, let's help
Yeah.
them.
Same here. I mean, that's, I think, one of the biggest goals that I have as well is just to like try to maintain and model that positive thinking and positive mindset around as many people as possible because it's, life throws things at us that we have to deal with, and sometimes they're not exactly what we want. But if we, what I really do appreciate right now is I feel like everybody kind of understands that we're all sort of in the same situation together, and everybody seems to have their backs right now, and people in general seems to have more of a growth mindset as opposed to a deficit mindset.
Right, and then how do we keep that? If we go back to some kind of normal, how do we keep this idea of where we're, have everybody's back, we're supporting everybody, how do we continue it? Instead of when we go back to normal going, that's your problem, not my problem.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a shared accountability or responsibility. Ask this to everybody, thinking about things in the past that maybe you felt at the time were failures, but turned out to be blessings in disguise, so to speak. What's been your best failure?
I was going to say my best failure is I kind of got into that mid-career lag or complacency where I started doing a lot of the same thing over and over. You know, because, oh, I got that planned. I don't have to worry about that. And this spring, when we went to online, made me really look deeply into what I'd been doing because I had to change it, right? Because I couldn't stand there and deliver what I was doing, or I couldn't do the activity that I would have done to cover some of those notes, you know, or that concept to get it down. So I had to reevaluate what I was doing as an economics teacher, which in turn means I have to evaluate what am I doing altogether as a teacher. So I would say that was my biggest failure. Just doing what I said I'd never do, be that teacher that just kept recycling everything and maybe add one new thing. Or, you know, when you're told in a professional development, this year we're going to be doing Kagan strategies. So you're like, okay, I'll add a couple.
That's awesome. I mean, it's like you've got this component that you were able to like just deeply reflect on, you know, like kind of taking the something that was very negative with this COVID situation and using this like almost to an advantage in a way.
Well, yeah, because once we went online, I had things already set up and echoing that, but then, you know, I had to ask myself, well, how am I going to get this across to kids so when they leave here, they've learned what I want them to learn?
Yeah.
So I had to do some scrambling, some changing some things. And
Thinking about advice for others, what would you offer advice to colleagues, younger teachers, teachers that haven't been in the game for quite so long?
Get out of it now? No.
Hope not. Do not listen to that, people.
Yeah. Get out of it now. Get out now while you can, for you're too far in. No, actually, what I'd tell anybody beginning is don't always go to the internet for lessons and pull them off. Yes, granted, I understand it's easier to do that than recreate the wheel, but I think you get a better understanding of how to unfold a topic or a course if you've planned a good chunk of it yourself. And you should plan it around how you would teach it or how you think about it. And I got that advice when I started teaching economics, and I'd never taught it before, had the one college course, and over the summer took a couple courses. At the time it was called Colorado Council for Economic Education. And my first class was down in Colorado Springs, and I had to drive down there every day and got there early. And I sat down with a teacher that probably taught economics for 20 years, and he kind of helped me plan. And that was his biggest thing for me, was to teach economics the way it unfolds for me, not the way some other teacher did it. Or, you know, he said, because you can come to us, Colorado Council of Economic Education, and we have enough already pre-made lessons that you could just Xerox those and do those, but plan it the way it unfolds for you.
100%, make it work.
Yeah,
for yourself.
Which, and then he said, when you go to teach it, you'll be a better teacher because you're understanding how it unfolds. You know where you're going to go. You know how A, B, C, D, all the way to Z are connected. So when you're back at L, you can easily bring that kid back to B where they're missing that point, and catch them right back up.
That's really great advice. Nick, I really appreciate your time here today. I appreciate the dedication that you've had to Arvada over the years. You know, you have a tremendous amount of experience. You have a tremendous amount of expertise. I think hopefully people listening will be able to like connect and hopefully use you as somebody around here that has a lot of wisdom and can help support them. So thank you for all your time here today and for all of your dedication to Arvada.
All right. Thank you very much for having me and letting me, I guess, say some of my opinions.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you all for tuning into today's podcast. I want to encourage you to take a minute to reach out to today's guest and make a personal connection. Until next time, this has been Jeremy Jensen with Who's Behind the Bulldog.